Kate. What are we going to talk about today?
So today we're going to be talking about tide pooling and how we can be really good tide poolers and stewards on our coast, if that sounds good to you.
That does sound really good, especially because I think people like to do it. And we've had these like big tidal shifts and now we've got time to go out, but we don't want to go around mucking things up.
Exactly. And so today, for the next few minutes, I was just going to talk about kind of what are tide pools and how we explore them safely. And so I don't know if I told you this, Mitch, but recently I started working for the Trinidad Coastal Land Trust. And I'm really interested in kind of where the land meets the ocean. And one of the coolest habitats in that nexus are tide pools. Are you familiar with what a tide pool is?
I am, but it's kind of one of those things where, you know, like when you think you know the definition for a word and you just use it, but if somebody says, what's the definition, you don't know it. I feel like that's kind of how I am with a tide pool.
Well, we live in a really special area, especially on the North Coast in areas like Trinidad, where we have kind of rocky areas. So, of course, we have big beaches, but tide pools are created for as small pockets of water that form during tidal cycles. And so you know this, we have two high tides and two low tides every day. And essentially those tides are created by the gravitational pull of the sun and the moon. It's like way, you know, beyond my training, but essentially those gravitational pulls cause tides. So the area of the shore that is more exposed during those low tides and then covered during high tides is called the intertidal zone. And that's where you find little tide pools. So these little pools that are full of life that are really, really fun to explore.
Are tide pools always in the same place? Like, because they're a rocky bit, they don't move, correct? Or
well,
do they?
Good question. I'm gonna say, yeah, they don't really move. That is correct. Okay. However, of course, my conservation brain is saying, well, with climate change and like our shifting seas, tide pools will probably not be where they are permanently. But there are these like long-term studies that happen on the coast, and they're able to do those studies. Like they literally drill these. They don't hurt anything, and they have permits, but they drill these like big bolts into tide pools, so they know that they're going back and revisiting the same sites over and over again. And I think those studies have been happening for a really long time. So yes, the tide pools pretty much stay where they always are. That's a great question. They're not like our sand where it's really moving a lot. Totally.
So what do we want to talk about with tide pools? We know that they stay in one place. We know that they're in the intertidal zone, but what's going on in there?
Okay, well, I'm biased because I am a biologist, I'm an ecologist, and so I want to obviously talk about the animals that are trapped in those tide pools, and I want to talk about their lives in those tide pools and how we can go see them safely. And so the animals that live in those tiny pools are typically invertebrates. So those are animals that don't have a backbone. Do you kind of have an invertebrate that comes top of mind to you when you think of an animal that might be in a tide pool that is missing a backbone?
Well, I think about nudibranchs, though I don't know if they're in tide pools, and anemones. Are either of those in there?
Yes, nudibranch are totally in tide pools. And do you know what their name means? Did I tell you this?
I think you and I talked about them, and I think about them all the time. So yes, I do. It means lungs on the outside.
Yes, naked gills.
Yes.
Exactly. So yeah, so nudibranchs you can find in there. And what was the other? Oh, sea anemones. Yeah. So those are perfect examples of animals you might find in a tide pool, and they're all invertebrates. And what I tell folks when I lead tide pool trips is that all of those invertebrates have to deal with three major kind of scary things threatening them. So if you're an animal that's trapped in a tide pool, there's three main things that you need to be concerned about. First, you have to worry about something eating you or predation, because you're in a tiny pool. So something might come eat you, like a bird or even a mammal, like a raccoon in some parts of California. Another thing you have to worry about is competition. And so because these pools are so tiny, There's a lot of invertebrates that really take up space in there. So something else you're constantly needing to contend with are competitors for food and for resources. And then the last thing you have to worry about, which is this fancy word, and I hope that I'm saying it right, is desiccation or drying up.
Mm-hmm.
And so it sounds like for you and me, we would actually kind of love to be desiccated right now. I don't know if you can conjugate that word like that, but drying up is another thing that these critters have to worry about. And so every animal that you or listeners think of that you can find in a tide pool, I challenge you to think about maybe how they protect themselves from either predation, how they deal with competition, and how they deal with not being dried up. I promise you, if you go tide pooling, which we're going to talk about hopefully in a second, you'll find something that they're using to deal with those three things.
Yeah. Yeah, I would think about, especially when you talk about drying up, because you think, oh, an anemone, they kind of sting. If a crab is in there, they're hard. But how would you keep yourself from being desiccated? That's a tough one.
So I'm trying to remember the anatomy of a snail, but I learned that in undergrad like 15 years ago, but I'll give you an example. There's these sea snails called turbid snails. I don't know what their scientific name is. A lot of my friends do. But when you go to a tide pool, you'll see these little, they're herbivorous. They like eat algae. They're these little snails called turbid snails. And something that they have when they close up is almost this kind of trap door that when they get scared, if you pick up a snail, which we're going to talk about what's safe and what's not safe to pick up at a tide pool, when you pick them up and turn them over and they kind of retract back into their shell, they have this almost like little trap door that closes them shut. And so that helps them stay dry on the inside of their body. So that's an example.
Well, and I'm sure that it would be harder for a gull to peck them out of there if they've got a little trap door. So that's doing double duty for them.
Exactly. And so a lot of them have those kind of adaptations to just stay dry, which is pretty cool.
Okay. So you talked about picking up a snail, and I know that you're going to be thinking about conservation. When you think about tide pools and going tide pooling, like, I'm scared to touch anything. One, because it might be like slimy, but two, but I don't want to hurt anything. So you said maybe picking up a snail. When you go out to be a good steward of the intertidal zone, what should you be looking at and thinking about?
Well, first, I definitely want to say that there's really good resources online. I think some of our best actually come from the state of California in the Marine Protected Area website, or California MPAs. So they have really good tide pooling kind of resources, and so do national marine sanctuaries. They have really good literature and resources on their website on kind of how to recreate responsibly in our coastal zone. But I will say, as someone who leads, I quite literally haven't done much in my life, Midge, but something I've done hundreds and hundreds of times is lead intertidal field trips.
Okay.
And thankfully, on the coast of California, where we live, especially in Humboldt, most everything in the tide pools won't hurt you.
Okay.
And that's something I'm actually really comfortable saying to you and our audience this morning, because I really want people to go explore their backyard. We live in a really special place. And so there are definitely guides that you can get to. Part of those resources, there's lots of guides online. iNaturalist is another really good resource that you can get on your phone, or the Seek app, S-E-E-K. And all of these guides will give you a little bit about how big a creature should be, and help, like, how big in terms of, like, helping you identify that creature.
Right.
But generally, Midge, nothing in the tide pools in Humboldt County will probably hurt you, as long as you're just gently touching it.
So what are some things that you could see in there?
Okay, so some of my favorite critters to see are... I really like crabs.
Yeah.
I think crabs are just like so silly, and they make me laugh every single time I see them. And they come in a variety of shapes and sizes, right? Like, hermit crabs are awesome. Did you know that a hermit crab actually steals shells from other critters that make their own shells, like a turbid snail that we talked about?
So when you say that, because other crabs, when you think about them, they've got these like hard bodies that go around them, but a hermit crab, Are they almost shaped like a little shrimp in there? I'm trying to imagine what they would look like on the inside.
Totally. I recommend that you and everyone like Google hermit crab without a shell. They yeah. look so bizarre.
Yeah.
But yeah, they have kind of a weird narrow abdomen that kind of fits in in their shell. And so hermit crabs, though, they don't grow their own shell. Their body's really, really soft. Unlike some gastropods or snails, like the turban snail, they actually have this like cool way of using calcium carbonate and making their own shell from nothing. It's so cool. And the hermit crabs take advantage of that. And so when the snail dies, they'll actually use the snail shell to protect themselves. So you asked, oh, go ahead.
Oh, who, me?
Oh, yes.
So, no, you're going. I love thinking about crabs and shells. It's a lot. I actually think about how things make shells more than I think the average person, not more than you, obviously.
But, no, that's awesome.
Yeah.
You asked me kind of what I like looking in the tidal. So crabs, definitely. And because I'm talking about crustaceans, I wanted to share with you something that I'm so happy I'm able to, because I wrote it on my notes today, that another type of crustacean, so it's literally like crabs, lobsters, shrimp. Did you know that barnacles are technically crustaceans?
I would say yes, but then again, when I think about what a barnacle is, I could not in any way explain where their body lives. So yes, I guess it's a crustacean.
It's just so bizarre. So barnacles are like sticky little crustaceans.
Yeah.
And so barnacles you can find, you know, anywhere. I think there's like 1,500 species of barnacles in the world. But they're actually a type of crab, which is pretty cool. So I like looking at barnacles and crabs. And then I think another thing that I like looking at, I don't know, I like it all, but I guess I really like on a super low tide, sometimes you can find a species of sea star or starfish, however you want to call it, that has smooth skin, and it's called a leather star. And if you're lucky enough to see a leather star, I highly recommend that you give it a little bit of a rub. And then if you actually smell your fingers, it smells like garlic, which is crazy.
Not what I thought you were going to, you're blowing my mind with that one. Okay.
And so I like seeing all these creatures. And I think if you're okay with it, Midge, I'd love to tell you kind of like safe ways on how we can look at these creatures and interact with them. Does that sound good?
I would love to, again, just saying, hey, go out and rub a leather sea star and get a garlic smell. I'm like, yes, please tell me everything you know. I love all of this.
Okay, perfect. So I'm just going to reiterate again that most things in California, especially on the North Coast, in our intertidal zone, isn't going to hurt you as long as you're gentle. So I'm just going to say that.
Okay. So,
like I said, there are guides and resources on kind of what to look at and how to identify it. But I think most importantly, before getting into the nitty gritty of that, I think it's really important to keep ourselves safe.
Yeah.
So before you go out into the field and, you know, put your naturalist hat on and go for a tide pooling trip, and make sure that you check conditions of the site. And so there's two things that you need to check. First, the swell, right? And you can check that on surf reports or just the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. There's plenty of places on Google to check the swell. So make sure you see how big those waves are. Never turn your back to the ocean. And then secondly, in order to be an expert, you should check a tide chart. So like I told you earlier, there's two high tides and two low tides every day. And out of those two high tides and those two low tides, one of them is always super high and one of them is always super low. And anything below a 1 foot tide is going to be super good tide pooling. As a matter of fact, I looked up the tide predictions for this week. And tonight at around 4:50, there's a negative 2.2 foot tide. Whoa. In Trinidad.
I'm so glad you told me that it's 1 foot. I thought that it had to be at 0 feet to be good for tide pooling, based on literally nothing other than just thinking that that's the case. So I'm so glad you told me that it's 1 foot and below. That opens up a lot more.
Totally. you know, others might tell you different, but I think it's always worth my time and adventure energy to go at a 1 foot or below. It'll be really good.
Yeah.
And so this afternoon in kind of around Trinidad, we have low tides at around 5 p.m. for the next couple of days. So it's really good to go tide pooling at that time. So you always check the swell, you check the tides. And then the next thing you want to think about is how to keep the animals safe. So one way that's actually a really cool way to explore the tide pools is really, you know, take your yoga class, do your stretches, whatever you need to do, but it's actually to kind of like squat down with those bent knees and just observe without touching and see what you can see in the tide pools. I've seen the most amazing things. I've seen sculpins eating something. I've seen a hermit crab literally take off its shell, and I saw its weird little naked body and put on a new shell. I've seen ochre stars eat and tear open a mussel and eat the mussel on the inside. And so just observe. And then what I tell kiddos when I take them out into the fields in tide pooling is, if you want to pick something up, as long as you're not holding it outside of the water for more than like 10 seconds, and you can pick it up with a one gentle tug, I call it the gentle tug rule, then it's probably okay to pick up. Honestly, I really want people to get in there. There's some people that might not say, oh, that's best practices or not, but I think as long as you're not holding it out of the water for more than 10 seconds and you put it back where you found it and you didn't rip it off, it's a gentle tug like a hermit crab. Go look at it. That's totally cool. Look at it and put it right back where you found it. They're really hardy creatures. Again, because they're dealing with predation, competition, and desiccation. So nothing is really going to hurt you as long as you're gentle. And it's a pretty amazing place in Humboldt County to go see these invertebrates. So you should go and look at them. Do you want to know two really good spots to go?
That's, I was going to say, where could people, I love that you're saying not only is this safe, it's fun, don't be scared of doing it. I love how accessible you're making it to everybody. You're saying like, hey, at 5 o'clock tonight's a good time. Like, I love where this is going. So yes, where would be a good place, especially somebody who doesn't know a ton about tide pooling? Like, where could they start off, put on their, like you said, their naturalist hat and get going with tide pooling?
Okay, perfect. So as I said earlier, I'm working for Trinidad Coastal Land Trust, and I promise this isn't just a plug to get you to one of our properties, but a lot of really good tide pooling is at Baker Beach, and that's publicly accessible. We really work hard at my organization to make sure that the coast is accessible to our community, and I can tell you that there's really good tide pools in Trinidad at Baker Beach. And then another really good place is in Sume. They have really good, you can just talk to a ranger and they have really good tide pooling areas there too. That obviously they have a fee to get in. You know, it's important, but I know that can be a little bit trickier for folks, but their tide pooling there is epic.
So when you go, you're just looking for, in that intertidal zone, you're just looking for rocky bits, right? Is that what you're looking for?
Exactly. That's exactly right. So you're looking essentially where the ocean touches the land and it's rocky. And a lot of the rocky zones also have, through time, I'm not a geologist, but they are shaped as pools. And the really special thing about California that isn't true, like I lived in Hawaii for a while, there's tide pools there, but what's really cool about California and parts of Alaska, for example, is that we have these kind of extreme tide events. And so even though a lot of places in the world might have like rocks where the ocean meets the land, what's really special is that we also have kind of extreme tides. And so it really lends itself to creating the habitat that's so cool to explore.
I would have thought that extreme tides would mean maybe less tide pool. So that's cool to know that it means maybe more tide pooling.
Right, because if the ocean doesn't change that much, like if you think, I'm like moving my arms so much to try to describe this, but now I realize no one can see me. But if you imagine like kind of just like a pool going up like a little bit or just back a little bit, there isn't that much change. But when you imagine the ocean getting push up to where we live to retreat, it kind of, it makes a little bit of sense, I hope, that it kind of, it as it's retreating or as it's back, it makes that habitat in its wake, if that makes sense.
I see. Yeah, it does. And again, it's kind of one of those things, like when you said, do you know what a tide pool is? I think especially, you know, we live in Humboldt County, we think about these things kind of as just givens, right? Where you go like, yeah, it's tide pooling, but you don't always step back and go like, wait, do I know what's living in there? Do I know why it's here? Do I know the best way to get out? And it's kind of nice to refresh people on these things that we talk about so often in a way without really explaining it, you know, or really diving into it. It's nice to kind of like give a little refresher on a thing that we think we know, but when you think about it, you go, oh, I maybe don't actually know as much about that as I thought I did.
Totally. I try to do that all the time. And I really appreciate you giving me the space to talk about it today. And I hope that everyone goes tide pooling and keeps themselves safe and also keeps the creatures there safe, you know, and just, yeah, touching. And you can pick things up, just put them right back where you found them. It is technically prohibited and against the law to take stuff out of these zones unless you have a permit. We're not even going to get into that right now. So just have fun and be safe and check the tide and check that swell. Never turn your back on the ocean. So if anyone wants to go tide pooling with me, find me at Trinidad Coastal Land Trust and I'll go with you. I want to go.
Well, I was going to say, and you're an expert at this. If I was going, I would trust you with any of my tide pooling needs. And your timing of this, fantastic, because we've been locked inside. It's been raining. It's been cold. And we have this like weekend of sunshine. Now, it looks like there could be some rain again on Monday, but I have the feeling people are going to want to go to the beach. People are going to want to go for some walks. People are going to want to, you know, get outside. One thing on tide pooling, because I know when I get outside, I want to bring my dog. Don't bring your dog tide pooling with you. I think that that's probably keep your dog at a safe distance. They don't know the gentle tug rule. They don't know the 10-second rule. So watch out with your dog.
Thank you. Good call. And like the barnacles and other things can probably scratch their paws. So we'll add that to the best practices list.
Exactly. We're keeping all animals safe here. Well, I really appreciate you taking the time to talk with me today. And again, especially about something fun and accessible. I think people need that right now. I know I personally need that right now. But we've come to the time when I ask you, do you have, since this is a radio station, a song about tide pooling or creatures or a 10-second rule or any of that that you think might be a nice soundtrack to remind people to enjoy our natural landscape in that intertidal zone?
Yeah. So I don't know if you're going to be able to find it. And if you can't, you're going to have to improvise and find a song image. But there is a song called Number One, like N-U-B-E-R, One. And it's by House of Shem, S-H-E-M. And it's kind of like an island song. And it's pretty rad because it's easy for us to now remember that at a 1 foot tide or less, then you should go out and tide pool. So that's where that came from.
Perfect. I found it. And again, that's another good one. Like I said, we think we know these things and then we go, wait, do I actually know that at all? And to know that now it's a 1 foot tide, I feel like that does kind of open up some possibilities. So that good reminder on there, like it's like a mnemonic device almost, but with a song. So good thinking on that.
I love it. And it's a song about love and I love the ocean. And I know a lot of people in Humboldt County feel that way too. So it's a dual meaning and I hope you enjoy it. And I'm just so excited. I hope to see people in the field tide pooling.
Yeah, me too. I'm so happy. Thanks for taking the time to talk with me today. I'm going to play House of Shem Number One. I really appreciate it, Claire.
Cheers. Thanks, Mitch. Bye-bye.
Bye.